Kia ora and welcome to Amran's Podcast, episode 175. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd, 2009. Well, it has been a while since I've been able to chat with you. The last episode of this sort was nearly 2.5 weeks ago. I'm beginning to feel like I'm doing confession. Yeah, forgive me, Father, if I have sinned. My last podcast was 2.5 weeks ago. Except I'm not Catholic and I don't believe in confession. But be that as it may, it has been a while. Now, today I'm just going to catch up on some things that I've talked about, because when it goes a long time between podcasts, these sorts of things tend to pile up. But next week, I'll be back with normal topic-oriented episodes, although I'll continue to update stories as they come along. But I just wanted to kind of, you know, get everything all current before moving forward. Now, what's of course has been happening is that in the interim, I have been doing these two political podcasts with Jason, and we've upped the schedule to try to do them every 10 days instead of every other week. And that means that they're a bit more frequent. But it also means that sometimes it's just not possible for me to do two Amran's podcasts in that week and a two political, because it was all in the same feed. And, you know, they'd sort of be on top of each other. And I don't podcast daily. And I know that many people, because I do, have iTunes set up to delete, to keep only the most current episode. And naturally, I want people to listen before that happens. So that's what's been going on. But of course, Too Political is now in its own feed, and you can subscribe to it directly by going to twopolitical.com. That's the number twopolitical.com. And subscribe through iTunes or Feedburn or whatever you want to do. But those episodes will no longer be posted to Amran's podcast, starting with the very next episode, which I believe is later this week or early next week. I've forgotten. Jason's been away, so that schedule may be affected slightly. But also, last week, I debuted the new live format group shows. Now, that particular one, being the premiere, I had a guest, Jeffrey Taylor, at the first part, and then we had the group chat in the second part. And future ones will not be 2 hours long, I assure you. This week's won't be. This week's will just be about an hour, and it will start at approximately 8 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, Eastern North American time, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific, and 12 noon Friday in New Zealand. And you can go to pride48.com and click on schedule, and you can change the schedule to your current, to your own time zone. You don't have to just remember all that. And find out for yourself what time the show will be on in your time zone. Now, this week we're due to talk about healthcare, specifically what you'll just have to wait and see. Starting this week, I'm going to post the topics to amranspodcast.com, and that post will then eventually become the show notes for that episode once I ultimately post the recorded version. So those of you who may read through a podcatcher or some sort of feed reader, like, I don't know, whatever, the title won't change. But what will happen is that the text will change, and of course there will be the MP3 file attached to it. So I'm just sort of giving you a heads up in case you look at titles to see if there's something new, because that won't tell you. But generally speaking, the live episodes will be posted later the same day that I record them, and they will be lightly edited, if at all. So they'll pretty much be as is. And that is pretty much the updates of such things. The regular Amran's episodes, like this one, are back, obviously, and I expect to be doing those again on Tuesday's New Zealand time, Monday North American time. And that'll be a regular episode, usually about a particular topic. Sometimes, like this one, they may be catch-ups. Sometimes I may be talking about what's going on with me, whatever. Basically, the normal podcast. And then Thursday, U.S. North American time, rather, or Friday, New Zealand time, will be the group shows, the live group shows on pride48.com. Right, those. That's a podcasting update. I'm already out of breath. But anyway, now, there's a few things I wanted to tell you about, and to update, I should say. And first of those is this story of the partial defensive provocation that I've been talking about. And to refresh your memory, the story is that in New Zealand law, there is this thing called the partial defensive provocation, where a murderer can say basically that their victim provoked them into this act, and therefore they should be found guilty of manslaughter instead of murder, which obviously carries a much shorter sentence, and you don't have the stigma of being a murderer and blah, 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 blah. Now, I have looked, I've tried to find some information on this, but it's not that easy to come by, especially because I don't have access to newspaper archives and things. However, I'm reasonably certain that if the defense has been successful in heterosexual cases, it's really rare that, at the very least, we can say with certainty that the number of times that a gay victim, the killer of a gay victim, has gotten off in this defense is way out of proportion to the population. In other words, most of the times when someone is successful in this partial defense ploy, they have killed a gay man more often than not, certainly far more often than not, and maybe exclusively. And I don't know that for certain, and I just want to be upfront about that because I don't know that. But that's what I suspect reading between the lines. But at the very least, we can say that the vast majority of cases, a gay man is the victim. Now, as fate would arrange it, there were two cases that were side by side that sort of drove this home. The one that got all of the media coverage was a university lecturer in the South Island who killed his girlfriend. He stabbed her 216 times and claimed that she provoked him into it, basically. The jury didn't buy that, find him guilty of murder, and a week or so ago, he was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum non-parole period of 18 years, which means that he can't be even considered for parole for 18 years. That's, in New Zealand terms, that's a really stiff sentence. And I don't think that there's anyone in New Zealand who would disagree with that sentence. They think that is absolutely, he deserved the maximum that he could get. And I certainly don't have any problem with that at all. I think that's a just sentence. However, just before that case went to trial, there was another one in which a Hungarian tourist had murdered a gay man. He beat him with a banjo, and when the banjo broke, he took the banjo's neck and shoved it down his throat. And the guy died 3 days later when he was taken off life support. The murderer claimed that the victim had made sexual advances, and therefore he was provoked, and he was successful. The jury found him not guilty of murder, but instead guilty of manslaughter, buying this stupid ploy of the partial defensive provocation. So when he was sentenced to 12 years in prison with a minimum of 8 years without parole. And theoretically, in 8 years, he could be freed. And whether that happens or not, I don't know. However, what the two cases essentially are saying is that the pretty white girl who was murdered, her life was worth more than the gay man. And that's what it boils down to. And that's why I find this partial defensive provocation so deeply offensive. On no planet can this travesty be allowed to continue. And the New Zealand government is pledging to repeal the law. The Justice Minister, Simon Power, has said that it rewards a lack of self-control. The Law Society recently came out, which sort of provides advice on laws and needed changes or not, and recently said that it shouldn't be repealed until there's an opportunity to come up with an alternative. Well, I say bullshit to that. This law has been used almost exclusively against gay people because it essentially amounts to the gay panic defense. What they're saying is that a heterosexual who believes, doesn't actually necessarily have, but believes he has been approached sexually by another man is justified in murdering that person. And that is fucking bullshit, and it's about time that be removed. I make no apologies for the strength of my language on this because I cannot believe that this law exists in a country as enlightened as New Zealand. And it cannot be repealed fast enough for my liking. And I'm certainly going to continue on this, and I will name and shame any MPs who vote against it because they are on the side of criminals. They are on the side of the gay bashers. And I'm not going to let this go. But that is one of the things I wanted to update. I was not happy about the really light sentence that the murder of the gay man got, as you might imagine, but he got basically what he could get, considering that he showed no remorse and that he had his ploy, the partial defense of provocation, accepted. His lawyer was crying all the crocodile tears. They were supposed to feel sorry for him because as a Hungarian, he will have no one visiting him in prison. While, as I said in my blog, and I quote, "Boo fucking who? I don't really care. That's his problem. He made the choice to commit murder, and he has to live with the consequences. The victim's family has to live with the consequences, so I don't really care. Let him rot for all I care." Now, I have said before that I won't offer any immigration advice through this podcast, and I don't on my blog either. And the reason is that earlier this year, a new law went through requiring that anybody providing advice has to be licensed as an immigration advisor. And just today, there was an article in the New Zealand Herald that was headlined, "Blogger Told to Stop Advising on Immigration." And I think this sort of explains why I'm doing this. It says, a blogger who came to New Zealand from Britain has been warned to stop giving immigration advice on her blog or face prosecution under the Immigration Advisors Licensing Act. The Immigration Advisors Authority says Helen Winterbottom, how's that for a name, Winterbottom, was breaking the law by posting on her site and has told her that she must get a license if she wants to continue. It turns out that if you don't have a license and you give immigration advice, you could be subject to a $100,000 fine and 7 years in prison, which is a pretty steep penalty. Now, in case you're wondering, I did look into it, and it turns out that to get a license, I mean, obviously there's a process you've got to go through, you've got to prove competency and all that sort of stuff, but it also costs $2,000 to get a license. About a third of that is, well, not quite, almost half of that is the actual license fee, and the rest is some sort of levy. And that's set by regulation, apparently, and I don't know exactly what that means, but that's what the authority says. And so I'm not going to be getting a license. It's just not worth it because, I mean, obviously, if I got a license, I would have to charge for any advice I would give, and I'm not about to do that. And I could theoretically apply for a waiver of the fees if I offered it strictly on a non-profit basis, but it's still just not worth the hassle. And so if you are interested in coming to New Zealand as an immigrant, immigrating here, I would suggest you go to the Immigration Service, which I believe is immigration.govt.nz. Anyway, there's a link in my blog, certainly, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But I will not offer you advice. You will have to find it yourself or find a licensed immigration advisor to advise you on immigration. And again, I wish I could be more upfront about that, but I just can't. Now, what I can do, of course, is talk about my experiences and what I found. I haven't actually talked that much about the immigration process as such that I went through. I mean, I haven't talked about how this is a good way to do it necessarily because, I mean, times have changed and the way things are now are not the way they were when I first arrived in 1995. But they are certainly, I will be more careful about what I say about immigration. Not that I've, as I said, not that I've been going around giving advice anyway, but I'm not going to say anything in this podcast or on my blog that would in any way suggest that a person do a certain thing or not do a certain thing. However, until and unless the authority tells me I can't, I'll certainly tell you about what I did and what my experiences were as it comes up. Because, I mean, I think that's legitimate. It's just saying what I found. It's reporting on what I saw, what I felt, and what I experienced. And I personally don't think that the immigration authority, whatever the hell it's called, has the right to tell me not to do that. Because the Human Rights Act, as I understand it, says that I can. So as long as I'm not offering advice, that's pretty much how we're going to continue. But yes, so that's what's behind my not offering advice. The Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, he's in the U.S. now. He left yesterday, and actually on his flight to San Francisco, the first leg of the flight, there's apparently a medical emergency on board, and a doctor had to help some woman who had some sort of reaction. But she left the plane unaided, the news media said. But he is going to the U.S. for the opening of the U.N. General Assembly. President Obama is speaking there. Apparently, the Prime Minister is as well. And on Thursday, U.S. time, I think it's Thursday, U.S. time, the Prime Minister will be on the David Letterman show doing a top 10 list. And actually, come to think of it, it might be Wednesday, U.S. time, because the article I read didn't specify what day they were talking about, whether it was here or in the U.S. Anyway, we don't know any more details about it other than that. And they consider it to be a good opportunity to promote New Zealand as a, you know, as a tourist destination or whatever. I don't know. We'll see. The show won't be broadcast in New Zealand until Monday of next week, I believe it is. And Monday or Tuesday, I've forgotten. And although I'm sure that that segment will end up in the evening news, probably. Although, I don't know. It's actually shown on a different network now that I'm thinking about it. But anyway, be that as it may. Yes, so he is in the U.S. He's apparently going to have at least a brief meeting with President Obama. I don't know if it's a formal meeting or just a, hey, how are you kind of thing. And he's going to sort of be promoting tourism because in addition to prime minister, he's also minister of tourism. And so we'll see what that is, what that's all about. But if you do watch David Letterman, you might want to have keep an eye out for our prime minister. And speaking of immigration and tourism and all that sort of stuff, there were figures released just recently that the number of permanent and long-term arrivals in New Zealand is up overall, but it's down dramatically from certain areas. The number of tourists is down about 1% on August of last year. And the most dramatic decline has come from Asian countries. They've stopped coming, pretty much. But the number of tourists from Australia is up quite substantially, which is kind of interesting. But still, the number of permanent long-term arrivals from into New Zealand has been increasing. And that's actually what's been behind the increase in housing prices, which have started to climb again slowly. But they're starting to climb, or maybe stabilized might be a better way of putting it. And so all these people coming back to New Zealand obviously need somewhere to live, and that's what's kind of driving it. Now, speaking of all of that, there is speculation that later today, when the official government statistics are released, it may show that New Zealand is officially out of recession, because you have to have two quarters of positive growth, or at least no decline, in order to be considered out of recession. I don't know if that's going to be the case, and I frankly can't delay the recording to find out. So if I remember, I'll tell you next time what the story was. But this is all sort of stuff that's kind of, I don't know, swirling behind the scenes as with the prime minister going, and the New Zealand dollar is extremely strong right now against the U.S. dollar. And oh my goodness, people are worried about that. But oh, well, whatever. But it would be nice to be officially out of recession, because that would mean that things are picking up. Just this week, the government passed the final, had the final vote passing the bill to create the Auckland Super City, which I've talked about before. There's a few last-minute tweaks in where the border is going to be, especially in the northern end. There's a rural district just north, the northernmost part, and they're going to split it in half. And they've decided, after hearing the constituents, that they're going to put all of it in the new Super City. Yeah, whatever. I don't really care, to be honest. but the Super City will have a council of 20 representatives. I really despise the term Super City, by the way. I don't even know why I use it. The New Auckland Council will have 20 representatives, all of them elected from wards. You may recall that when I first talked about this, that there was some talk that they may be elected at large, at least a percentage of them. Well, they are now all going to be elected from wards or districts or whatever you want to call it, but they actually are called wards. And there will be 20 to 30 community boards, which will be smaller bodies, which are basically in an advisory role. They have no budget of their own. They have no powers of their own. Everything they get will come from the Auckland Council. So they're kind of a... I think they're more like to as a salve for the public, so they think that they've got more democracy than they're actually getting. That's just my impression. I don't know that, especially because they're not established yet. But the reason they don't know whether there will be 20 or 30, because that will be determined by the local government commission, I think it's called, that determines representation and boundaries for electoral districts and things like that. And they need to work out. They need to basically keep the population even and manageable for all of the community boards. And so that's why they don't know if there'll be 20 or 30 or a number in between. But that's still to come. And there will, of course, be one mayor for the entire city council, for the entire city. And that mayor will arguably be the second most powerful politician in New Zealand, second only to the prime minister, because the over a quarter of the, well, about a third of the country's population will live in this city and will have a massive budget. And this will be a very strong mayor, which isn't unusual in world terms. The mayor, but it is unusual for New Zealand. The mayor will appoint his own deputy mayor and will appoint all of the committee chairs for the council. So it will be quite a powerful mayor. And although I don't have any problem with that personally, because it works in world in many world cities, it does mean that the government may end up regretting having created such a powerful politician for Auckland. Generally speaking, national elections are won or lost in Auckland because there's so many people here relative to the rest of the country, that is. So creating a strong unitary government for Auckland may end up being detrimental for a government of the day. Not necessarily this one, but a government. And so that'll be interesting to see as well. But, so things are moving on. There's still a few little bits and pieces that have to be sorted out. They have not yet appointed a chief executive to run the, you know, the corporate side of things. And so that structure isn't in place. There's a transition authority that is coordinating most of the preliminary work that has to be done. But until the council was actually established as the legal entity for Auckland, they couldn't really do very much. So that's been sort of on hold, I guess. But now that's all going to move forward. And there's just a few more bits and pieces to tidy up before everything moves forward. And the new Auckland Council is due to formally be established next year. I believe it's October of next year. There will be the elections for the first Auckland Council and the first mayor of the new Auckland. And so that'll be an exciting time for Aucklanders. The rest of the world probably won't care, but it's going to be a massive thing. And eventually I'll probably talk about this a little bit more about what it's going to mean, but it will be a huge city, not in terms of population. Obviously there's only about 1.4 million people in the new city, but in terms of area, it will be massive. And it will become the largest territorial authority in Australasia when it's all said and done. But that's about a year away. Now, I am going to go back to airmanspodcast.com, where I have one comment on the previous episode, 173, The People Have Spoken. And that was the one where I told you mostly about our trip to Northland and also what I hope is the final comment on the referendum that we had recently. And that comment was from Nessa, who said, "Arthur, I really enjoyed this show. Thanks for sharing all the details. I was actually a little sad when the show was over because I was enjoying myself." Thank you, Nessa. Nessa is co-host of a wonderful podcast that I listen to called Stars and Tartan with her husband, Derek, who is Scottish. So they're a binational couple as well. So I find that very interesting. And there is a link on my site. I'm just double checking, making sure that's true. Yes, there is. Under Parade of Podcasts, you will find the link to Stars and Tartan. And I have received some emails recently, and I would ordinarily go over those at this stage, but I need to sort of get myself reorganized so that I can go back to doing normal podcasts. And so I'm going to hold off until next week for anything once I have a chance to sort through them, because some of them I can't necessarily read because I wasn't given permission to, but they still may have things that I want to talk about. And so anyone who's sent me an email and they expect me to talk about it on the podcast next week. And of course, if you want to hear about any particular thing, always feel free to let me know. You can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at airmanspodcast.com, and I will do my best to address it. I'm working on some subjects for future podcasts. I've been so busy lately, I haven't had a chance to focus on that very much. And actually getting the live thing launched was a bit more involved than I thought it would be. But now that that's sorted, that should take care of itself, and Two Political is off doing its own thing. So I should be able to devote a bit more time to the more topic-related episodes in future. But that's it for today. I will be back again on Thursday, North American time, and Friday, New Zealand and Australian time, with a live episode. And as I said, we will be talking at least in part about healthcare in the U.S., and although I expect other countries will get a bit of a look in as well. And then, of course, a week from today, roughly, I will be back with a normal episode, and then again, a live show on Pride48.com that Thursday, North American time. And somewhere in there will be a Two Political podcast as well, which you can get to by going to twopolitical.com. That's number two, political.com. God, this is getting complicated. I've got too many things to promote. Anyway, that's it for today. I'll be back later this week. Talk to you then. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.